This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. 50 years ago, the United States Supreme Court declared the notion of separate but equal schooling unconstitutional. The Brown versus Board of Ed decision said that separate was inherently unequal. Yet in the 50 years since that ruling, the demographics of the U.S. have changed in ways its authors never envisioned. Patterns of housing and immigration have created in many areas schools that are extremely segregated and where the quality of education is far from equal. Nowhere is this more evident than in California. A half century after the Brown decision, it's easy to find public schools where nearly all the students are members of minority groups. As part of NPR's examination of the legacy of the Brown decision, education correspondent Claudio Sanchez visited California and prepared a series of reports. We begin in Los Angeles.
Buenas tardes a todos.
The Garfield High School Parent Council is about to meet, and a dozen parents or so have gathered in the cafeteria.
Por favor, tomen asiento.
There's only one item on tonight's agenda, the election of a new school council, and Julia Corona, a slight woman with curly red hair, jeans, and an oversized windbreaker, has vowed not to leave until someone explains why her son is not getting the help he needs.
Principalmente en matemáticas.
He's really struggling with math, and nobody seems to care, says Corona. She thinks she knows why.
El principal problema ha sido de que a los estudiantes que son de minoría les dan las clases más bajas.
Most of the courses here are dumbed down. That's the main problem, says Corona. She's convinced that segregated Mexican schools like Garfield get the worst of everything. Teachers, for example. Corona says the worst end up here. The best are assigned to wealthy, mostly white schools.
Es una actitud racista.
It's racist, says Corona. Her words echo the complaints of parents throughout L.A.'s vast, distressed Latino neighborhoods. In these segregated neighborhoods, kids attend schools where everybody is poor, where many students don't speak English, and too many aren't learning to read or write. But perhaps most damaging is the overcrowding in schools. The city has not built a new high school in 33 years. At Garfield High, the narrow hallways teem with over 4,000 students, 99% Mexican-American, the other 1% Central American. School district figures show that the average public school in Los Angeles looks a lot like Garfield High, segregated, or what UCLA law professor John Rogers calls intensely isolated. It's like we turned the clock back 50 years, says Rogers.
I think that school segregation has become naturalized in Los Angeles in much the same way that school segregation was naturalized in Mississippi in the 1930s. It is not a topic of discussion.
Rogers teaches a course on the legacy of Brown versus Board of Education. He's also co-director of the Institute for Democracy, Education, and Access at UCLA, which monitors school funding and segregation issues.
We have a situation right now where in many schools across greater Los Angeles, more than 50% of the teachers are untrained. In a school in South LA that I was working with, students did not get their textbooks for the first 2 months of school. We have a system where students are not being provided with the very basics.
District officials say these conditions are due in large part to things they can't control, like the explosion in the city's Mexican immigrant population and low-wage jobs, which have resulted in economic segregation and segregated housing. The school system can only do so much, says Ted Alexander. He's been in charge of the district's desegregation policies since 1978.
We tried deseg. Didn't work. Mandatory busing. Didn't work. White flight. Black parents who didn't want to attend. Latino parents want their kids closer to home. Some people feel more comfortable in their surroundings, which may be segregated, but it's voluntary segregation. Now, what we need to do is address the lack of academic achievement in those settings.
The kind of voluntary school segregation that Alexander is talking about is thriving in some neighborhoods. This is Academia Semillas del Pueblo, Seeds of the People Academy, a privately run, publicly funded charter school housed in an old Masonic lodge in El Sereno, about 50 miles east of downtown Los Angeles. This morning, the school's 28-year-old principal, Marcos Aguilar, his all-Latino faculty and over 100 parents are celebrating the school's second year in operation. Semillas del Pueblo is open to children of all races, ethnicities, and religions, but the school clearly caters to Mexican families.
Y les estamos llamando Isto Tequiteca. A ver, digan ustedes, Isto Tequiteca.
Students learn English, Spanish, and Nahuatl, an ancient language indigenous to Mexico and Central America. Math and science instruction revolves around the Aztec calendar. Students are grouped and assigned Nahuatl names printed on banners, each tied to a spear. Aguilar, who once taught at Garfield High, says segregation is not a concern here. 50 years ago, he argues, the Brown decision created an expectation that once children of all races attended the same schools, they would be treated equally, so they could all have a stake in the future of this country. But Aguilar says that for many minority children, Latinos in particular, that has not happened.
When I was a high school teacher at Garfield High School, one of the largest high schools in the United States, most of the Mexican children there had lost a sense of identity because its own administration and the general policy of the Los Angeles Unified School District is in fact to Americanize Mexican and African-American children in Los Angeles. And they would argue that that's good. I believe that that's not good.
What public schools are doing today, says Aguilar, is preparing Latinos for nothing more than minimum wage jobs. Here at Semillas del Pueblo, he says, Latino children and their families can claim their rightful place in American society on their terms.
Nowhere in the Constitution of the United States or in the Declaration of Independence does it say that because you come here, you have to now become an American. The United States is who is the immigrant here, not us.
Aguilar's views may sound strident, but they're actually mainstream given the politics of identity that so dominate Los Angeles these days.
I don't think what he's saying is un-American, but I think part of what he's saying is, look, there's more than one way to be American in this country.
Anthony Colon is with the National Council of La Raza, which funds Semillas del Pueblo and many Latino charter schools across the country.
Having 100% of any ethnicity does not make it wrong or bad or illegal. We support community-based schools.
And if those communities are segregated by race or ethnicity, it shouldn't matter, says Colon, as long as their schools are held to high standards and great outcomes. High standards, great outcomes. At Garfield High, some teachers say these are elusive at best.
Out of 1,000 freshmen that come in here every year, 650 graduate. What happens to the other 350? We don't know.
Dan Herrera graduated from Garfield High in 1956 and is now a substitute teacher here. He worries about how isolated Mexican-American kids are these days. But when you deliberately set out to segregate them even more, just so that they can feel proud of who they are, says Herrera, that's just as worrisome.
But so, you know, you got to have some pride, but you also have to compromise. And most of the people from my time did. These kids now, you go out to the street after school, these guys don't want to assimilate.
Why?
Because they're confused. They don't want to see. To me, where's the Stars and Stripes? That's my flag, wherever it is. These kids here, you ask them, they're Mexicans. They see this as an extension of Mexico.
These students are growing up with a very different view of America that Herrera says he does not share. Which is not to say that Mexicans back in the 1950s were treated fairly either. Let me show you something, he says.
I've got the annuals in front of me here. Let's go by the last surnames. Adam Radford, Madeline Auerbach, Arnold Ruth, Dahlia Baker.
Herrera has brought me to Garfield's library, where he's picked out a long table and laid out some old yearbooks dating back to 1925, the year Garfield High opened. Back then, only 2 out of 10 students were Mexican-American, a few Japanese, a few blacks. 7 out of 10 students were white. Garfield High was considered integrated, even though it didn't provide everybody the same quality of education, says Herrera. He flips page after page, pointing to all the students on an academic track.
Did you see any Latinos on this page yet? Over and over again, you have all these Anglos. So what you're seeing here is the white boys, the Jewish boys. They're not in the shops. Journalism, business. It was tracking, man. See, industrial arts, all the Mexicans are in industrial arts. This puts you that you were a pendejo right here. That's the pattern that you have.
Pendejo means stupid or slow. That's what some teachers thought of Mexican-Americans, says Herrera. That's why they didn't demand or expect anything of Mexican-Americans.
When I graduated from here, I didn't know what a noun was. I had to go to East LA College to learn. I had to take a bonehead English class.
I was lucky, says Herrera. Many of his friends never got a second chance. Herrera says he wants to believe, though, that school desegregation, as a means of improving the education of all children, is still a worthwhile goal. It's a work in progress, he says. It has to be. Claudio Sanchez, NPR News.